Welcome to the WGBH Forum Network weekly lecture series. From politics to poetry, science to satire, listen in and enjoy.
Basically, I want to talk a little bit about the culture of doping and then the testing that we go through, and then touch a little on the ethics and legalities, but I'll be leaving most of that, the legal stuff, to Max. I think that everyone can understand that in sports there are huge pressures to succeed. From the time you're young, you're, you know, imagining standing on the Olympic podium or running around. Everyone wants to be a winner. But basically, the process of being an Olympian or trying to win a medal in the Olympics is a long road. And I think that people who've been involved in sports for a long time understand that, you know, you have ups and downs. And I think that one of the hard things is dealing with those down periods. And one of the things you get out of being an athlete is knowing that you're in it for the long haul. And I think that doping is one of the ways that people see to try and make a shortcut. And shortcuts can hurt you, obviously. That gets to the insecurities that I have up there, too. You know, people who don't have patience, who don't see the process as being as important as the end. Everyone thinks that having an Olympic medal would be a great accomplishment, and it is. But to me, it's funny when you were talking about the silver medal not being the winner. Well, I guess that's true. But to me, when I won the silver medal, I considered it a huge victory because I knew all the things that I had to overcome in order to get there. And standing on the podium, I was looking back at those feelings of all the times that you could have taken a shortcut, but you didn't, and you persevered, and you worked hard through those things. So to me, the process was just as important as the outcome. And I guess it's easy to say because I did get a medal. Maybe if I hadn't, I would be singing a different tune. But I don't think that if I had taken shortcuts in order to get to where I was, it would have been worth as much. And I think that that's something we have to, that kind of value on the process is something that we need to get the children to understand and want them to appreciate in sport, and not look at an Olympic medalist as someone who's willing to take shortcuts or anything. Obviously, money is a big deal, and the more money you have in sport, I think that the more people are going to be willing to try and take some shortcuts because they have teams relying on them, they have sponsors, they have families depending on their income. When you're looking at amateur sports, maybe we don't have as many of the same dollar figures as the big professional sports, and maybe that's one reason why you're not seeing as much doping on an amateur level as you are on a professional level. But I think that money is always a huge problem when you're looking at doping. The more money, the more temptation there is to try and take shortcuts, to try and succeed to a higher level. And I think that a lot of athletes try to convince themselves that it's okay because they want to say that everyone else is doping. And I have a quote up here from Victor Conte in the whole Balco scandal. It's not cheating if everyone is doing it. And if you've got the knowledge that that's what everyone is doing, and those are the real rules of the game, then you're not cheating. And that's, I mean, I think that that's a justification that a lot of athletes use in order to let themselves think that it's okay to dope. And I'm here to say that not everyone is cheating, and that those people are robbing the clean athletes of the opportunity to try and get their best results. And I mean, a lot of times you have to look at your own performance and say that, be okay with it in your heart, because you know that it was a clean performance and that's the best that you're gonna to be able to get. And it's a hard position to be in as an athlete. And I guess with EPO and human growth hormone, those are two drugs that they hadn't been able to really test for very well in the last 10 years. Mostly, most of my career, they've both been out there. And just recently, they started being able to catch athletes further out. Initially, if you ever tested positive for EPO, you would have to be, it would have had to be a complete mistake by your trainers or whatever, because it could only detect a few days out from competition. But now they're getting better at their testing, and hopefully are going to catch more athletes with that. And with the whole Balco case, I'm sure most of you have heard a lot about that. It's with the designer steroids. And basically these drugs were being made just to fool the testing. And we all, as athletes, knew that this kind of stuff was going on and that it was out there, but we had no proof. And so finally, the testing agencies are starting to come up with getting ahead of the curve a little bit and maybe able to catch some more athletes with that. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm not used to PowerPoint. Basically, I wanted to talk a little bit also about the testing agencies and what we go through as elite athletes. We have USADA, which is the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, and then we also have WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency. And they both do two types of testing. One of them is called out-of-competition testing, and in 2004, USADA actually did 4,447 out-of-competition tests, and those tests are from a pool of elite athletes that are chosen by their national governing bodies. So in cycling, we all get chosen from our national championship results, people who might be going to world championships. And then they also have in-competition testing, which is normally the top three people in an event plus two random tests. So there is a lot of testing going on, but I mean, basically to test positive in competition, it just doesn't happen that often. And normally, and now without a competition testing, they're able to start testing people at different times in order to hopefully catch people while they're preparing for an event. Some of the problems with the testing is that it's not really that current, and a lot of athletes, I think, feel like they can get away with doping because the tests are generally a couple years behind where the athletes are. And like I was saying, finally, with WADA and USADA, they're being able to catch these designer steroids and not announce that they have a test for it and are actually starting to catch people. And that's with the THG that was with Balco, and then DMT, which is another designer steroid that was found in Canada, and just basically showing that Balco wasn't an isolated incident, that there are people out there trying to create these designer steroids basically just to fool the system. And because athletes have been getting away with it for so long, I think that the clean athletes don't feel much confidence in the testing procedures. And part of it is due to bad strategy on the part of USADA, I believe, because I don't think that they're testing for the right drugs at the right points in the seasons. I think that in order to do the dope testing correctly, they're going to have to look at each individual sport and start targeting certain time periods in which they're going to be testing for certain drugs so that you're actually catching people when they're preparing for an event and specific to that event. So, like in cycling, you wouldn't be testing for EPO, say, in December. You would be testing closer to the bigger events later on in the summer. And another big problem is that there's just not enough money to fund all the anti-doping programs that we need out there to actually help athletes. So to kind of walk you through our out-of-competition testing, like I said, first you get put in a pool of athletes, and then they randomly select from that group depending on how your results are. So the higher up you are, if you're winning Olympic medals or world championships, you're going to be getting selected more often for out-of-competition testing. And once you're selected for out-of-competition testing, you have to start filling out location forms. And basically, I mean, to come to this event here, I had to write to USADA, let them know that I was going to be in Portland for the day, but then I was going to be home tomorrow for, you know, in the afternoon. And they want to know where you are every day, every hour of the day for a quarter. So we're basically filling out 3 months worth in advance of where you're going to be. And if there are any changes to that, then you send in an email to USADA telling them where you're going to be so that you don't actually miss a test. Because if you miss a test, that could count as a positive test for you, and nobody wants that. So it is kind of difficult to keep up with where you're going to be all the time, though. And I think that finally, after 4 years of being in this program, I'm getting used to filling out those forms and stuff. Then comes the next part, which is notification. And basically, they have a representative sent to your house. They come knock on your door and ask you for a urine sample. And they come into your house, watch you do the urine sample, pour it all out. And it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of not invasive, but it's just, yeah, it is. I guess it's, you know, I've been around it for so long that I'm just used to it now, and it's not, I don't really think about it, but when I try and tell my mom or my grandma about, oh yeah, they came, they don't quite get it. And so I think that it's a really important part, though, and that's why I'm willing to do that, and that's why I don't yell at them when they come at, you know, 6:30 in the morning and knock on my door, because that's when they think they're going to catch you. So I probably am tested about 4 or 5 times a year out of competition at my house, just to give you an idea, probably a little, maybe once or twice a quarter. And basically, if you can't provide a sample when they come, then they spend the rest of the time with you until you can. So I've had them follow me, you know, to the store, or watch Law and Order with me, or whatever. But it's interesting, and that's all part of being an Olympic athlete. And then they send off your results, and you get a paper back saying whether you were, well, I assume, I don't know what they do exactly if you're positive, but I've always been negative, and I always just get a letter in the mail saying that you're negative, everything's good to go. So, and this is a little bit about what Ted was talking about, that, you know, people are enhancing themselves in all kinds of different ways, and that I think that society is starting to accept all these enhancements, and it's hard to understand how in sport we don't accept those kinds of pharmaceutical enhancements. But it's such a difficult thing, because, you know, how do you explain to someone, yeah, you can go out there and enhance yourself, but now that you want to be the best in a sport, I can't take a medication that my mom could take, and she's out there being a recreational athlete. You know, I'm nervous about taking a multivitamin or going to GNC and picking up some supplement, because I'm worried that it could be contaminated and I could end up testing positive. It's difficult, because you almost feel like you can't be as healthy as someone next to you. But it's all, I mean, in the end, I think that it's important it's important that we have to look out for those kinds of things, and maybe I can't take a supplement that my mom can take, but it's because I want to see sport being clean, and I want to see it the way I imagined it was when I was a little kid. You know, when I was 5 years old, pretending like I'm standing on the podium, I want to believe that that's what sport is, and that's why I that's why I'm willing to go through all the drug testing that's asked of us. I truly feel that as a clean athlete, that it's not anyone's right to be an Olympian. Basically, when you're going out there and you decide you want to be in the Olympics, you've decided to play by a certain set of rules. And one of those rules is that you're going to play the sport and you're going to play it clean. And I think that that's a super important part of the Olympic movement. And so that's why we're willing to go through the drug testing and hopefully that competition is going to be fair. I think that the non-analytical positives are important, and that's something that's in the news a lot right now, because it's saying that someone's positive without actually having done a positive drug test. I think that if there's enough evidence saying that you have cheated, that you should have to pay the price. You shouldn't be able to play in the sport anymore. It's not just your right to be out there competing. I also believe that they should be saving the urine samples for future testing when maybe they do come up with a test to detect these designer steroids or new drugs that are out there. I think that if there's a way to make athletes nervous that they could get caught sometime in the future, that maybe it would deter them from cheating now. Because, and especially in Olympic sports, you're not making as much money as, say, professional baseball or basketball or football or something. A lot of it's just in the glory of actually being able to say that you were an Olympian and you had a medal in an Olympic sport. And if you took that away from the athlete, that would be huge. But I also believe that you should be able to redeem your prize money from someone who beats you because of if they test positive. I was in a race a few years ago, and in cycling we have stage races, and this was at the Giro Italia for women, and I had the climbing jersey there, and for 2 weeks I battled it out for this jersey every single day. You're trying to accumulate points, and I fought as hard as I could, and I felt super proud of my performance, and ended up losing it on the last day by 1 point. And the woman who beat me ended up winning the entire race, and she ended up testing positive a month later. And to me, it just, you know, I'm so glad that it ended up that it came out, because I knew that something was different, that she was performing on a different level than she had ever performed before. But it was just so hard to have lost a jersey. We won a jersey when you win a competition like that. And to have lost a jersey in a major event like that to someone who was cheating just really hurt. If I had lost it fair and square, that would have been one thing, but to have lost it because someone was cheating was just indescribable. And I didn't end up getting my jersey till a couple years later. You know, they sent it to me and stuff. And, you know, it would have been fun to be able to go up there and celebrate and have a great time. Instead, we were all miserable because I had lost the jersey on the last day. And I just wish that there was something else you could do to make someone pay for something like that. And unfortunately, she was from a country, Belarusian, and they, at that time, WADA wasn't in charge of all of the sanctions, and her federation hardly punished her. She got maybe a couple of months suspension and was back racing again the next year like nothing happened, whereas now she would have had a two-year suspension, because it's no longer up to the governing body to sanction them. So in that sense, I think that, go WADA, it's important. We need to have more things like that happening. Well, not more sanctions happening like that. And lastly, I think that and unfortunately, she was from a country, Belarusian, and they, at that time, WADA wasn't in charge of all of the sanctions, and her federation hardly punished her. She got maybe a couple of months suspension and was back racing again the next year like nothing happened, whereas now she would have had a two-year suspension, because it's no longer up to the governing body to sanction them. So in that sense, I think that, go WADA, it's important. We need to have more things like that happening. Well, not more sanctions happening like that. And lastly, I think that dirty athletes, they end up taking advantage of the system. They end up testing positive, but they don't ever have to financially pay it back. You know, they say, I'm sorry, and we're supposed to think that that's okay, and it's not okay. A lot of us, you never seem to hear from the people who are getting beaten. You know, you hear how their rights are being violated or whatever, the test needs to be more proven or something. It never seems to be their fault, and yet they're taking away all these things from clean athletes. And I think that a lot of times in all of this, the clean athlete is getting forgotten, and that's something that I think is really needs to be changed, and I believe that they're trying to work on that. I don't want to sound negative, too negative, because I love sport and I love what it's all about. But I, as having been a clean athlete for 15 years, I've seen a lot, and I know that it's going on out there, and I think that things have come a long way and they're starting to catch people now. But this whole new frontier of gene doping, it's like just one more thing to add on top of it, and it's hard to know. I mean, it's taken them 10 years to start catching people with EPO, even though we've known it's been going on forever. So I'm really concerned for the 10 years after gene doping starts. When with the EPO, we had cyclists who were dying from using EPO when it first came out. And, you know, finally, now we're starting to catch people. Well, I think the same thing's going to happen with gene doping, and it's just a very scary frontier, I think, for sport.